next guest. And I tell you, folks, as you know, the mission of the show is to keep the history and legacy of our trailblazers and pioneers alive. But we also will spotlight future stars. And next, coming in to the Coach's Corner, is a young lady that is just getting it done. You just heard from James Pop Tubman talking about the importance of being a student athlete. And we have, in my opinion, the epitome of what a student athlete should look like and represent. So let's go without further ado and bring up Noah Boyd. Noah, good evening and welcome to the Coach's Corner. First of all, let me congratulate you on receiving a scholarship to Charleston Southern and just continuing to excel in both the classroom and on the tennis court. So congratulations. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the nice introduction.
Yes, yes. And let's start off, talk a little. Well, first of all, as a student athlete, how are you handling this very unique situation that we're in? It's uncharted waters with the COVID and in terms of not knowing whether you're going to be actually in a classroom or doing it virtually. And practicing. Talk to us about the adjustments that you've had to make both academically and athletically.
Yeah, so it's been pretty hectic, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, this is the first time anyone's really had to go through this, so I can't say I was prepared, but I would say that kind of just focusing on my mental health and just trying to do everything that I can, trying to only really work for the things that I know I can change, has really helped me through this and through the college recruiting process and through my schoolwork. So just not trying to stress too much about the things that I can't change.
That is a great approach for all of us. Only be concerned with the things that you have control over and not the things that, you just have no power over, basically. So give a brief introduction of yourself. Where do you attend school? Where do you live, et cetera?
Yeah. So I'm a senior this year, and I went to Springbrook High School for 4 years. I play tennis, and I've been playing since I was 6 years old. So it's been about 11 years because I'm 17 now. And I love the sport. I also really value my education. I did an IB program at my school, and that's kind of like college-level classes to prepare you for your time at your university. So that's been really good. I live with my parents, and my brother is in college, not too far from us. So, yeah.
And by the way, I don't know whether you're aware of this, but I have been a friend of your family for years, years and years ago. I coached your uncle, Bobby Jr., who was a tremendous player. And, of course, you know, your dad and your other uncle, your dad David and Michael, are just two great guys. I love them to death. So this is special for me to have you on the show. And so talk about how the origin and how you got started in sports, and not just a tennis phenom, but also an all-around athlete.
Yeah, so I definitely came from a pretty athletic background. Both of my parents were played sports when they were younger, whether it was high school sports or my dad who played tennis at an academy. But I kind of got started because my brother, he was playing. And after a little bit after he started to play, then I started to get into it when I was about six. And then my parents, they would always be at the facility with us. So they decided to, well, my dad decided to start playing again. And mm-hmm. same with my mom. So that's kind of how I got into that. And I just really enjoyed the sport. I enjoyed the people who I was around. So that's how, kind of how I got my start and how it continued over the years, just because I really wanted to do it. And so, mm-hmm. yeah.
And then also, let's talk about excelling in track and field and how one sport assists you in the other and vice versa.
Yeah, so I did track and field my freshman year of high school, and it was initially it was to make friends, because I knew that joining a sport, you kind of get a sense of family with your teammates, so I really wanted that. And so initially I didn't really know how much it would be able to affect my tennis, but in the end it was really good for my endurance and my speed. And it was also kind of just a good, I would say, break from tennis, because I would spend a lot of time at track. So that break kind of lit a fire for my really want to play the sport again. So because I wasn't spending so much time playing tennis, it made me miss it. And once I got back, I just went up from there. So the track was definitely a big help, I think, in my path to becoming a better tennis player, physically and mentally.
Absolutely. And I've always encouraged young people up to a certain age not to specialize. And when you are 12, 14 years of age, play as many sports as possible, and then when you reach your level where you see you have a clear path, i.e. a scholarship to college and possibly beyond, then you can specialize and put more time in your craft. But as a younger individual, a younger student athlete, I've always suggested to play as many sports as possible. Now, I know that you are in a good space, and what I mean by that is being a young tennis phenom coming up, but when you turn the television set on, you can see so many role models, so many young women of color that look like you. Talk about what that means to you, and who are some of your models, so to speak, on the tennis court?
Yeah, so there's definitely, I'm fortunate to say that there's a lot more representation now. So I'm definitely able to see a lot more women of color. And kind of the obvious choice, I would say, would probably be Serena Williams,
mm-hmm.
just because she was kind of the trailblazer for black women in tennis, even though she wasn't the first, but she really kind of put us on the map. And so I would definitely say that she's a big inspiration, just like her poise on the court and just her will to win is definitely very inspiring. So I would say that she definitely inspired me in a lot of ways to want to get better. And she kind of showed that anyone can do it. So, yeah.
And wanting to get better. I had a basketball player on a couple of days ago, and I've had a number of players. And to a person, they talk about the hours that they would spend on the court putting up shots, 300, 400, 600 or more shots per day. Talk
mm-hmm.
about the hours that you spend on the other court, the tennis court, and take us through what a normal workout routine would be for you, Nora Boyd.
Okay, so should I talk about before COVID or after? Because it's a little different.
You can do both.
Okay. So before COVID, I was practicing at least 4 days a week, and each practice would be 3 hours, if not more. And it would just be me going to school in the morning, and then straight from school, my dad would take me to tennis. And the first 2 hours would be just hitting and competing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then right after that, we would have at least an hour of fitness where there's strength training, there's some running. So it's kind of a good mix. And I would do that throughout the week. And then if I had a tournament, then those last all weekend. So it can be 2 to 3 matches every single day. And matches range from 1.5 to 3 hours. So it kind of just depends on how I'm doing that week.
And you mentioned strength and fitness, i.e. endurance. So mm-hmm. specify a little bit about your training. For example, in basketball, you would run wind sprints, you know, line
mm-hmm.
to line.
Mm-hmm.
You would, you know, run steps. So how do you improve as a tennis player? How does one improve his or her endurance?
Yeah. So tennis is definitely a very endurance-based sport, I would say. So we tend to do things like bike sprints. That's one of the things that we do. And we also just do straight running, whether it's long distance or short distance. It depends on the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just getting those reps in so that when you get on the court, it's as simple as possible. You don't have to worry about getting tired. So I would say there's a lot of running involved in our fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the strength training, I think that's more about getting us strong so that we don't get injured.
Mm-hmm.
Because building up that muscle is what you really need in order to just be strong and, yeah, so not get injured as much. And it's also really important to stretch.
Mm-hmm.
I always make sure to do that after practice to avoid injury. So I would say that's really important too.
Now, when you said bike sprints,
mm-hmm.
expound a little bit on that. What are bike sprints?
So it's a stationary bike, and you do 20-10. So it's 20 seconds going as fast as you can, and then
mm-hmm.
a 10-second rest. And that just
mm-hmm.
goes over and over again until they tell you to stop.
Mm-hmm. And tennis is – there's certain sports that I'll look at, and I'll say, well, you know what? At one time, I could do that. But then there are other sports I'll look at, Noah, and say, there's no way, no how, ever could I do that. I couldn't hit a curveball, okay? I could not hit a curveball. And I'm looking at tennis, and I'm looking at the speed of the ball from one angle to the other. And you got to go to the net, backhand, and I'm saying, no way I could do that. I think your sport is one of the more challenging of all sports. I say that the toughest task in sport, or one of the toughest tasks in sports, is to hit a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But the other most difficult, I think, is hitting that tennis ball from different angles, backhand, et cetera. You know, talk
mm-hmm.
about the difficulty for people like me and some of the listeners to accomplish what you and others make it look easy.
Yeah, I'm actually, it makes me happy to hear you say that because feel like a lot of people don't realize how challenging it is. And it's definitely the type of sport that you have to start from a young age, I would say. I think those are the people who end up being most successful.
Hold it right there. Excuse
mm-hmm.
me. Hold it right
mm-hmm.
there. that is a very important point, because the more difficult of sports, let's say baseball, as I stated, I think hitting a baseball is so difficult. And to piggyback on the point that you're making, in order to be a really good baseball player, you've got to start at a young age. Can't get a late start in baseball. You can get a late start in football, and if you're a big guy or a big player, you can get a late start in basketball. But in baseball, and as you're stating, in tennis, you can't get a late start. You have to almost come out of the cradle with that racket in your hand.
Yeah, I think it's just because it's such a technical sport. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those other sports that you mentioned, there's definitely a lot of technicalities, but if you're athletic, then you can kind of pick up on those sports. But because tennis and, like you said, baseball, it's not those, the motions that you're doing is not something that just comes naturally. It's something that has to be learned. And so I think that's why people have to start from a young age. And
And for some of the people like yours truly, who I watch tennis, but I'm watching it from a spectator's perspective. I don't know the game that well. When I watch a basketball game, I'm watching it with a different lens. I'm watching it from a coach's perspective because I know the game. I know baseball pretty well. But when I'm watching tennis, I don't know. And sometimes, to be honest, you know, if I want an answer on tennis, I'll call your dad and I'll say, Dave, such and such a player, what do you think? And then he'll break it down to me. And I said, okay, thank you. All right, but talk about the differences and similarities, if there are, between women's tennis and men's tennis.
Yeah, so there are to me, in my opinion, it's a completely different sport, men's and women's tennis. I would say that women's tennis, is there's a lot more strategy that goes into it. Not saying that men don't use strategy, but for women, you don't always have to be the player who hits the hardest ball or the most talented. I think it's a lot more mental. Whoever really wants it the most, that's who's going to win. And, of course, technical stuff does come in play. So if you can't get the ball back, you're not going to win. But at that professional level, everyone can get the ball back. So in my opinion, it really comes to who wants it the most and who's willing to work the hardest. For men's tennis, say, a lot of it has to do with kind of your serve, which is what starts off the point. So if you have a good serve, you can win the match in men's tennis. That's how important it is. And this is just in my opinion. And, yeah, so I would say definitely your serve has a big part of it. Your movement, but that's kind of, I would say a similarity is the movement part. If you, if you can move, then you can be successful in tennis professionally.
And the serve, how do you practice? Again, I'll always go back to what I know and use analogies. For example, in basketball, if you want to improve your free throw shooting, you get in the gym and you work on your fundamentals first, and then you get your shots in. So now how does one improve his or her serve? Same thing. You do it against a wall. You find a friend or someone, and you practice your serve. How does that occur?
Yeah, so when it comes to the serves, I would say it's similar as what you said with the jump shot. You can just go out there by yourself with a basket of tennis balls and just start hitting serves. that it's really just about the repetition and the practice. So if you practice your serve, it will get better. But that's a lot easier said than done, because not a lot of people want to go out there, including myself, and just be alone just hitting serves. So that's definitely something I need to that I wanted to do more as well. But, yeah, for serves, it's really just about repetition. Initially, you're going to need a coach's help to try to get you the right technique and all that. But when you get to a certain age, you kind of know what you're supposed to do. So at that point, it really just goes to if you want it to get better.
Now, I'm looking at these rankings, and I take rankings with a grain of salt. And my advice to you, and I know your parents and your coaches have reiterated this, that you should take it with a grain of salt. But looking at the rankings for the sake of this conversation, you're ranked 85 nationally, tennis recruiting, and number one in the state of Maryland. Talk about the mindset. And on one hand, I would advise, hey, that shows the dividends, so to speak, the end result of the hard work that you've put in thus far. But you can't rest on that, because there's someone somewhere that's practicing. So you have to continue to get better. Now, that's how I see it, but how do you see it being ranked nationally and being number one in the state? Talk about that.
Yeah, so when I was younger, because I've been playing since I was really little, I have never been number one. So I have played from the perspective of being the lowest ranked person in the tournament, and being about in the middle, and more recently being the number one. So I would say that at all three, I try to keep my mindset the same, because I know that every day anyone can be anyone. So I really don't think about the rankings too much. Although it was a great accomplishment, I just really try to know that anyone could be anyone, and it could always be someone's day. And I think that's what got me to the number one position, just not really worrying about that too much. Because when you start to think too much about the rankings and the points and all of that, I think it can just get a little bit too overwhelming. So I just try not to focus on that and just put in my best effort every single time.
You know, I would always tell my players, nameless, faceless, respect the game. And what I meant by that, and what you're saying, the same thing, is that regardless of who you're playing, it could be a team, in my case, that's ranked higher, or it could be a team that ranked lower. But don't worry about the rankings and who you're playing. Do what you have worked on and what you have been directed to lead you to victory and to stay focused. And the other motto, a great coach once said, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts. What you learned after you know it all that counts. So, yeah, just really, you know, really, really keep that focus, because, you know, we've watched it. We've watched television, and you mentioned the GOAT, the greatest of all time. From my perspective, is Serena Williams. Even she have been upset every so often. And so anyone can get you if you're not on or if you're not focused. So how do you that hunger when you've reached the number one status, how do you remain hungry in saying, hey, I'm not even going to look at that, acknowledge that. I'm going to play as if I'm ranked number 50 and not number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I try to focus more on the long-term goals. I would say that at the time, being number one was kind of a short-term goal. So my long-term goal was always to play in college. And I knew that even though I'm winning these local tournaments, there's millions of people out there who are also winning in their section. Mm-hmm. So I just try to think about that, know that this is just a little part. I mean, it's a whole state, but Maryland is just a little area, and that there's so many other people who are working harder than me. So I just need to push myself as much as I can so that when I go to college, I'm ready to see some new players. So always just pushing myself as hard as I can go. And I feel like everyone kind of knows when they're pushing themselves. So just knowing what's kind of always trying to push harder, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. No. Always try to push harder, and you push harder by your work ethic, okay?
Right.
Now, let's transition into the most important part, and that's the academics. And you
mm-hmm.
push hard on that. Obviously, you're a tremendous student athlete. So now how do you manage your time, first academically, with your tennis? Because it's only so many hours in a day. So talk
mm-hmm.
about the time that you put in studying and preparing for tests and writing papers, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely approach that with the mindset that education is I can always use my education. Tennis might not always be around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I tried to make it my number one priority, because I knew that that was always going to be there. And it was a privilege for me to be in school, so I really need to take advantage. Also, I always had my parents, like, to motivate me. So when I would go to tournaments on the road, I had my mom to remind me to finish that project or do your homework. And although it might have been annoying at the time, I'm grateful that I had someone there to tell me to do my work when sometimes it might not have gotten done unless she had told me to do so. So definitely having people around you that can remind you to work harder and kind of remind you what the end goal is, which was always going to college. So I think that just being surrounded by good people and also reminding yourself what you want out of this. And for me, school was always the priority over tennis.
Mm-hmm. And do you sometimes feel like you're missing out? Because I know that you would not be number one, going back to the earlier conversation, if you hadn't put the work in. And sometimes you're on the court when maybe some of your friends are, hanging out, getting a burger, going to the mall, going to a dance, and doing what normal teenagers do. But someone that's focused and driven, looking to reach a goal and has a vision, you're practicing. Does
mm-hmm.
that ever wear on you, or you're doing what you want to do because of your passion?
I'd say that when I was younger, it was a lot harder, when I would have to, like, miss a birthday party to go to a tournament, and then I would lose first round in the tournament. And then I'd be like, oh, why am I even here? And stuff like that. But as I've gotten older, I would say that it's gotten easier to miss things just because I know what I'm going to get out of this. I know how important it is and how lucky I am to have this opportunity. So I would say that as I've gotten older, it's gotten a lot easier. Also, my friends are kind of used to it now. So, and they're busy as well. So we kind of all just adjust to each other's schedules so that I don't have to miss too much or they don't have to miss too much. So I would say that as I've gotten older, it's gotten a lot easier. But I was always okay with it in the end because I knew that I was getting better.
And at the beginning of the interview, we talked about you being also a standout track and field, but you fell in love with tennis. But you could have excelled and gone to college, I'm assuming, on a track and field scholarship because out of Springbrook High School, number one ranked in the 16s and 18s in the Mid-Atlantic. And so, once again, just expound on why you selected as your bread and butter, so to speak, getting college scholarship tennis versus track and field.
Yeah, so when I was doing track my freshman year, my tennis started to get a little worse because I was spending more time doing track and less time playing tennis. And I hated that I wasn't doing well in tennis. I hated that I was losing to people that I didn't used to lose to. And I could see that I was getting worse, and I didn't like that. And although I did really enjoy track, I think I enjoyed it more for the people who were on my team rather than the actual sport. I think that I'm more of a tennis player just because I really liked the thinking out there and all of that rather than just the physicality of it. And track, I would say, is more physical. So I definitely enjoyed tennis more, and there were times when I thought about just quitting tennis and just going with track, but my gut always told me that tennis was where I wanted to be, and so that's where I stayed.
And let's go back to the question that I asked early on about being in a good space, meaning that you can turn the television on in any of the big tournaments and see young ladies of color. And some are maybe your age or just a few years older. Do you ever watch the matches and say, you know what, God willing, one day I may be on the court competing against that particular player, that particular player? And then also, do you also dream and say, I think I can beat her?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I definitely thought like that. And I was like, wow, one day, what if I'm on the other side of the net of Serena or Sloane Stephens or Madison Keys? But as I've gotten older, I think I don't actually think that as much just because I'm really set on just going to college. Like, that was my end goal out of everything with tennis, just getting a scholarship to go to college. So when I watch the college matches online, though, and I see people of color, I definitely think that's really cool and very inspiring, too, and I'm like, maybe one day I'm going to see one of them. So I would say more in that sense rather than the professional level.
And now let's talk about the college process. And as I said during the announcement, the Charleston Southern Women's Tennis Program, you will be a member, okay, 21-22 roster. But talk about that process. Were there other schools involved? Talk about the short list and why you selected this particular institution.
So this situation was definitely very unique because of COVID. I always had in the back of my mind a safety school, which is my state school, and I always thought that I would have them as an option. But because of COVID and the new rules and regulations, that school was no longer an option. So when I found out about that, it was very discouraging. I thought that I had no other options. So at that point, I really did not know what I was going to do. And more teams were filling up and more people were getting committed. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to get committed. But a couple weeks later, I got an email from a school, which was Charleston Southern, basically recruiting me. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, it's just going to be another school I don't want to go to. It's not the school that I thought I was going to go to. But instead of just being sad and not having any hope, I decided to email them back, and I talked with the coach, and I really liked her. She was really nice. And I found out that they checked, like, all of the boxes, so we decided to go down there to check out the school, and I loved it. And shortly after, I said, I want to go there. She said, okay, now I'm going there.
That's great. That is great. And I always talk about whether or not I've had the opportunity in my 20-plus years of doing sports radio, of interviewing Hall of Famers, professional, college standouts, et cetera. But I always talk about transitions, and from every level, you have to evolve and you have to get better. From, let's say, you know, junior high school or middle school to upper school, from upper school to college, and from college to the professional rank. What are some of the things that you are working on that you feel you need to improve to be ready for that next level?
Right now, I would say that I'm working on really holding myself accountable. So me making the personal choice to go out and do the extra work, because I know that when I go to college, it's going to be up to me to make those decisions. My parents can't tell me what to do. My coaches, well, they can tell me what to do, but it's really up to me if I want to just go to that next level. So right now I'm really working on that, and also just holding myself accountable when it comes to my work ethic. So if I'm not working hard, I need to realize that and start working harder. And I would say that's what I'm really working on right now, because I know that when I go to college, although I'll be on a team and I'll have coaches, it's really up to me to hold myself accountable and be responsible and make those decisions to better my tennis and my schoolwork, because I'll be alone.
Mm-hmm. And the second option, I don't know whether you heard much of the conversation with our earlier guest, James Pop Tubman, but what I said was, during my time as a coach, and if I had a player who aspired to be a professional basketball player, I would never, ever tell them, no, you can't do it. But what I would say, and I'll reiterate it again with you, was that's option A. What's option B? So now, looking to your crystal ball, and obviously if things work out, you know, we would see you playing on television one day or getting paid to play. That's option A. But what is your option B? Obviously getting a degree or degrees at a secondary level. But if you're not a professional tennis player, or if you are, and when you retire, what else would you like to do?
Yeah, so right now, I'm actually not sure, but I definitely have some things that I know I like and that I think I would enjoy. So I am going to major, I'm going in majoring in business, just because I feel like that's an important thing that can be applied to a lot of aspects of life. just like knowing how to run a business or how to manage others. Mm-hmm. And I definitely like the idea of being my own boss. So
that's right.
something that would allow me to do that would be great. I also love speaking. So doing something that allows me to speak to others, work with others, I think I would really enjoy. So although I don't have a solid career choice that I know I want to follow, I definitely know the mindset and kind of the path that I need to go on to be successful in whatever I do. So kind of just like keeping a good work ethic, keeping a good mindset. That's just really like my long-term goal.
And then once again, let's break down for us neophytes and the difference and the mindset of playing doubles versus obviously a single competition.
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of there's a misconception that doubles is less stress because it's two people. It's a little bit more fun because you have someone out there with you. You're not alone. But I would argue that doubles is a little bit more stress because now you're responsible for a win or loss between two people. So you kind of have to hold yourself accountable for your mistakes. And if you're making a mistake, it's not just affecting you, it's affecting your partner. So as I've gotten older, I've actually come to appreciate singles more just because it's just me out there. And if I lose, it's because of me. And if I win, it's because of me. So I've come to like singles better just because I can be more independent and I don't really have to worry about someone else as much. So yeah, I would say that's a big difference. But on the other hand, doubles can be very fun because tennis is such an individual sport. So you finally get to have some sort of a team kind of relationship going on. But I would definitely choose singles over doubles.
And how important is it in terms of chemistry, working with your partner and complementing one another?
Yeah, that's a huge part of doubles because you could have the two most impressive players out there, but if they don't get along, it's not going to work. Because if you have two people with huge egos, let's say, and they don't want to be responsible for their mistakes and they just want to put the blame on their partner, it's not going to work out. Versus two people who know their partner's strengths and weaknesses and are willing to work with that, I would say that's always going to be the stronger team because there have been times when me and my partner have not been the most impressive players out there, but because of the chemistry that we have, we're able to just pull through and really grind it out and win it. So it's the chemistry, I would say, is the biggest part and just being able to communicate with your partner.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And let's go back to the academic aspect, and I'm impressed. Talk about a member of the Spanish Honor Society.
So I've been in the Spanish immersion program from pre-K to eighth grade, and the only reason it didn't continue is because there wasn't an immersion program at my high school, and Spanish immersion just means that half of the school day is spent where they only speak to you in Spanish and you only speak back in Spanish, and then the other half is all in English. And so that definitely created a great foundation for my Spanish speaking to this day. And it's just been such a cool experience to be able to learn about the Spanish culture because it's just so intricate and it's beautiful. And I've really enjoyed learning it over the years. And not only that, but it's a very important tool now just because of how diverse the area we live in. and it just creates great job opportunities, knowing how to speak both languages. So I feel very blessed to have gotten the opportunity to learn Spanish. And,
And also let our listeners know about winning the Fila Reach Award 2020. What is that?
Fila Reach Award was an award that it's given out to a player who they believe is just doing something more than just tennis. And it was honestly a huge honor to me because I didn't even know until a week before that I was getting it. And so it was a great surprise. And they gave it to me because of what I had been doing during quarantine, which was me and my other friends had organized a protest with the Black Lives Matter movement. And we really took it upon ourselves to do something instead of just sit and watch. And I think the Fila team really admired that. And so that was a huge honor to me. I was very grateful. And it was just a cool experience all around.
And how would you, this two-part question as we get near the interview, and this has been, I mean, so amazing, and it's always a blessing and an honor to visit with our future and to know.
Thank you.
Yeah, and to know that we do have the best and the brightest coming behind, and you certainly epitomize the best and the brightest. But how would you classify your style of play? For example, in tennis, are there styles like one player may be a power player, another player may be a finesse player? If that is the case, then how would you classify your game as we speak?
Yeah, so I would say that I would fall more on the aggressive side of the sport. I like to take advantage when my opponent is on the defense. But with that being said, I would also say that I kind of am a mental player as well, equally, because on the court, I really like to just be solid mentally. So I don't like to show any emotion, so a lot of times, like, people will joke that when I'm playing, you can't tell if I'm winning or losing because I keep the same face the whole time. Unless, of course, it gets super intense. But I would say that I really like to be a mentally strong player because I think tennis is all about that. Because there have been times when the person across the net from me has, and I'll admit, was better than me. But I was just, I really had my mindset on I can do this and I don't care who's on the other side of the net. I'm going to do everything in my power to win. And in the end, it worked out. But there's also sometimes when it doesn't. But I can leave the court knowing that I put in my best effort and that I made them win that match. And I didn't just lose it for myself.
And those are really two great points. I always say that in most sporting events, more games or contests are lost than won. And some people know or don't understand that, but you just explained it, that there's a difference when you have a competition, and in your case, two individuals or in a team sport, both teams play at the top of their games, and one team just emerged victorious. That's a win. Versus playing an opponent in football that fumbles the ball five times. You know, that's a loss. But going back, and I've always said, in any sport and even in life that the difference between average, good, and great is not necessarily physically, but mentally. And when you have that mental toughness, again, I talked with Pop Tubman, the earlier guest, and he played on the number one high school team, 1982, in the country. They won 34 straight games. But there were some games that they were behind. One game, he said, they were behind by 9 points with like a minute left in the game. They came back to win. They were behind by 15 points at halftime. That a game I saw, they came back to win. And so I said that the sign of a champion is not how well or hard you punch, but how well you can take a punch. And when you talk about that mental toughness, you have said a mouthful, because I've always believed that's the difference between good and great, that mental toughness. But how do you develop that? Is it something that can be learned? Is it something that's innate? How does one develop mental toughness? Now, I have my theory, but I'm going to shut up. I want to hear what you have to say. How do you and others develop that mental toughness, as you've just stated?
I would say that most people develop mental toughness just by experience. So by playing tournaments after tournaments, you kind of begin to make that connection. And it's kind of about the reflection that you do afterwards that really builds the mental toughness. Because if you're just losing and losing and losing and you're not thinking about why or what did I do wrong, there's not going to be anything learned. Therefore, there's no mental toughness being built. It's just you losing and then just not thinking about it, just going on to the next one. For me personally, I would say a lot of the mental toughness that I've developed is just because of my spirituality. So I believe in God, and when I'm out there, I just feel like I'm not alone. I feel like I have someone who's out there with me, and this is what me and my dad talked about, because he kind of, I believe the reason you are so calm on court is because you grew up in a spiritual environment, and when he said that, it really clicked, and it really made a lot of sense, because when I'm out there, I don't feel like I'm alone and that I have no one to turn to. I feel like there's always someone there spiritually helping me through it. And I think that built a lot of mental toughness, because I never felt like I was alone. I always felt like someone had my back.
And the other part of that, I believe, and you tell me whether or not this applies to you, Noah, but I also believe that in your mind, you have envisioned success before the actual moment arrives. And what, again, what I mean by that is that I would always tell people, whether athletes or any young folk, that whatever you have to do after you said your prayer or where you've meditated, envision you doing it successfully before you actually take on the task. Does that apply to you?
Yeah, I would say that it does. With my training with JTCC, Junior Tennis Champion Center College Park, we have a mental coach who helps us with that. So kind of envisioning the win and envisioning us in the best position, just so that it's in our mind and so we have something to kind of work towards, and we know that we can do it. So yeah, I would say that that's definitely a big part of success.
And then finally, how does that carry over to your life away from tennis?
Mm-hmm.
I've always said, Noah, that every young boy or girl should participate in a sport, regardless of skill level, regardless of interest, but play at least a year of a sport because of the carryover values it'll have in life. And
mm-hmm.
if you have that mental toughness based on your spirituality and based on your confidence in an athletic contest, I guarantee you that will carry over twofold in the real world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
In
right.
the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the classroom, when you have to give a speech, when you become an educator or a spokesperson for a corporation, or being a mogul in the business world, that confidence will carry over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is just so important. And then again, lastly, do you want to? Some people, some players, some athletes, regardless of talent, when the game or the contest is on the line, they don't want to take the last shot, or they don't want to have to be in a tennis contest, a tennis match. And you know what? They have the opportunity to win. Do you relish those opportunities, wanting to be on the court against the best with the game on the line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think in my experience going to different places and seeing how and realizing how blessed I am to have what I have and have the opportunities that have been given to me by my parents, it's really made me come to appreciate what I have and make me want to work harder. And not only that, but it's shown me that there's always someone working harder than me who might have less than me. And it shows me that I need to realize what I've been given and do something with it, because the opportunity's not always going to be there. So when it is presented to me, I need to take it. And that definitely applies to life, because there's going to be opportunities that are always going to come and go, but it's really about who's willing to take that risk and really do something with it and do something about it. So I'm definitely going to take that into my own life and my future.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, that was a drop the mic moment. I don't think we can add too much more. And as I said, this was very special to me. I am so proud of you, so impressed. As I mentioned earlier, I go way
Thank
back
you.
With your family. I just love your dad, your uncle, good people, and I know that they're so proud of you. I'm proud of you, and you continue to represent them, your school, and the DMV now. when you go away to college. But this has been a great, great visit. And, hey, if you want to give some shout-outs or if you want to take the last minute to use it as you see fit.
Well, I just want to first say thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this, and it was really fun. shout-outs? I want to shout out definitely my parents, my mom and dad, because
mm-hmm.
they've done a lot for me.
Sure.
Also, can I shout out my dad's business?
Oh, hey, look, if you don't, I will. Now, our listeners are very familiar with your dad's business, and that's Tacoma Station. Yes, full disclosure, the our guest, Noah Boyd, is the daughter of David Boyd, who is my good friend and the one of the owners of my favorite spot, Tacoma Station. And they know 6914 4th Street Northwest, we had the best happy hour for the middle-aged people in Baltimore and D.C. anywhere, and God willing, when the covert ends, we're going to continue it. But right now, as I tell them every week, they can go and experience the great grilling of Super Chef Adrian Stewart. He's grilling, and as they say at Tacoma Station, they're grilling, sipping, and chilling on the sidewalk cafe, under the tent with the heaters. How's that for a plug? But
that,
I'll let you
that
continue.
That pretty much summed it up.
Yes. Yes. And so now when you were talking about, you know, going into business and being your own boss, I'm saying, boy, I tell you, it's in the blood. The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. But no,
yeah.
this has been awesome. Great luck. We pray for your success. And definitely, this is not the last time you will have a visit with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And folks, oh boy, what an interview, what a visit. Noah Boyd, number one ranked tennis player in the state of Maryland. Also, you could tell, tremendous student athlete. And, you know, with all of the negative news you read about blacks and this, that, and the other, hey, that's a small percentage. And we're working to improve them. But for the most part, our young people, they are walking in the path that we've cleared for them. And as always, hey, we talked about Tacoma Station. Yes, check them out, 6914 4th Street Northwest. Check them out this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And Chef Adrian Stewart, he'll be on the grill. If you want salmon, as I like, you can get it. You want chicken, you want ribs, burgers, you've got it. And, of course, the famous Tacoma Station drinks. And again, you can check them out, 6914 4th Street Northwest, or visit them at www.itstacomastation.com. Also, for all of your dental needs, it is Elite Dentists. They have two locations, one in Silver Spring, Maryland, and the other in D.C., and that's on Willow Street Northwest. Give Dr. Walker call at 301-933-5175. And Germ Sweep, it is Germ Sweep to come in and kill the bacteria and germs in your home and in your office. Boy, they have a product that is CDC approved, and their goal is to make your property clean and safe. It's Germ Sweep. You can reach them at 800-202-6202. It's 800-202-6202. And the very best in family funeral care, it is Horton's Funeral Service. Horton's Funeral Service, they're located on Kennedy Street Northwest. You can give them a call at 202-829-9000. And as for my brother, my friend, he is Randolph Horton. And speaking of my brother and friend, Rick Hampton Sr., great job, great week. Appreciate you. Much love. And check out the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. It's the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com for tonight's interview and the previous interviews. And I want to thank James Pop Tubman, great job. Oh, man, I enjoyed talking with Pop. And then, of course, Noah Boyd. just a great night. And folks, I promise you, next week, oh boy, next week, starting off Monday, we are going to have Scott Simpkins. Scott Simpkins is a historian and researcher on the old Negro Leagues. And if you are a fan or if you want to learn more about the Negro Leagues, you don't want to miss that. And then the second part, we'll have a visit from Larry Shorty Coleman, outstanding star, Duval Senior High School, and played a number of seasons with the Harlem Globetrotters. And we'll have so many legends nationally, D.C. and Baltimore, starting next week. But until then, folks, hey, as I say, always make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. And we'll see you next time. Have a great, safe weekend.